Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
Sam Cook there.
Great voice.
Mason in Ireland. Change going to come.
Hey, Mace, let me duck this in there because I thought it was interesting.
Yeah,
I used
to,
where I live, I used to live around the corner from Devin George, who won three rings from the Lakers.
Sure.
And Funch, this is a heads up that I want to go to this Devin George sound. He was on with Golic and Wingo this morning, and Devin is from Augsburg College, which is a small school in Minnesota. He grew up outside of Minneapolis, and when George Floyd was murdered, Devin said that it may have been a shock to the rest of the country, but the police brutality enacted on that video was not a surprise to him. This runs 2 minutes, but I think it's worth a listen. This is Devin George explaining why people shouldn't be all that surprised by what happened.
It's a shock to some people. To me, it's not. From being a person that has worked in the community, as my nonprofit's there, I do affordable housing. I'm constantly working with people in the community, and people that are in it could see it coming a mile away. The reason why is there are so many hopeless people that have no hope, no reason to look for tomorrow. All of us that live our lives, we have something to look forward to. Our kids are safe. Our kids are healthy. They're going to school. We have our kids' game coming up on Saturday. They play basketball, they soccer, whatever it is. But you have so many people that just have nothing to look forward to tomorrow. And that's the dangerous thing, is the system was creating more and more people that had nothing to look forward to. And that's what you see when you see the looting, when you see the rioting, and you see all the stuff that's going on, the people there, they don't have anything. Those aren't people that have a possible promotion on their job coming up next week or next month, or a possible interview that they're going to be called in next week or whatever. Those are people that have nothing to lose. They've been sitting down the game of life. There's no hope. There's no way for me of winning. It's pushed against me. And then I'm stuck in this area in a food desert, no place to eat, no place to go, no transportation, no health care. And this is what you get. And those are dangerous people to deal with, people that have nothing to look forward to tomorrow. And the system creates more and more of those people. And that is why us as athletes or local heroes, when we come back, it gives the community some kind of hope, because they know this guy doesn't have to be here. He's here. He's looking after me. He's helping my kids. He's mentoring this kid when they see us. And so that is what our job is, to restore some hope. But sometimes it's just too much.
I thought that was a very good explanation of how the pandemic ties to what's going on now.
Sure. I mean,
that people
right
have been
now,
pent up.
State of California, it's estimated, has a 25% unemployment rate. 25%,
right.
And that disproportionately affects working class, disproportionately affects people of color.
We don't have any answers, Mace, but we may get some now.
Yeah. Joining us right now is Georgetown professor of sociology, New York Times contributing opinion editor and writer, and he writes for ESPN's The Undefeated. Michael Eric Dyson joins us. Michael, thanks so much for coming on. How are you?
Thanks, my friend. I'm fine. How are you?
We're good, Professor, and we really appreciate you. I know you're getting a lot of requests today. We really appreciate you taking ours. I'm gonna start with something unusual. Michael, we started the show today by saying we're a couple of white guys. We've been on the air 20 years in Los Angeles, and we need to be good listeners. We need to not talk as much as we listen, and we need to have a lot of empathy. As people in that boat, what would you like to see guys like us do? How can we help?
Well, I think, first of all, even being conscious of that, asking that question is extremely important. I wrote a book a couple years ago called Tears We Cannot Stop, A Sermon to White America, where I asked, beseeched, even begged, white brothers and sisters to do a range of things. And one of them is simply, as you're doing today, to listen. Listen to the hurt. Listen to the pain. Listen to the agony. But beyond listening to the hurt, pain, and agony, read. Become familiar with what it means to be black in America. You know, it's in books, it's in articles, it's in essays, it's all over the internet. We have a deluge of information about what it has meant historically for black people to struggle against the odds in America, because this didn't just begin. And then beyond that, to have empathy enough to understand how outraged black people are at this point. Can you imagine looking at a member of your particular group begging for his life, laying prostrate on the ground with three other cops on his body, in his back, the knee of a policeman in his neck, and he's begging for his mother, begging for relief, begging to be able to breathe. And because his humanity is so profoundly disrespected, he is not listened to. He is not heard. He is not seen as a human being worthy of a complaint and worthy of registering on the consciousness of that white cop or those cops his humanity, so that they will lift themselves off of him so that he will not die. And it's not just that act, that gesture. It's the complicity of the initial report that suggested that underlying conditions of health, heart disease and the like, caused this man to die. No mention of his neck being crushed. Mm. No mention of the knee into his neck. No mention of the other police people helping him to expire. So there is a complicity that goes beyond the initial incendiary act of murder, where the complicity has not yet been held to account. But I think that it is important for white brothers and sisters to talk to each other. You know, I kid my students sometimes and I say, you know, when you go home for Thanksgiving, after you eat the turkey and you get the not sweet potato pie, I guess they would be a pumpkin pie. After you do all that, when you have conversations at the table, just begin to take down some of the vicious stereotypes that prevail. You don't have to be an orator. You don't have to be a social activist or a woke engaged young person. Just be somebody of conscience saying, hey, you know, some of that stuff you believe really ain't true. And the things you say about black people, I know them. I'm at school. I talk to them. I speak to them. They are not what you think they are. And then if we can have that kind of conversation, honest, open conversation, where white people say things to each other that they would never say in public for fear they'll be branded racist, for fear that they are racist, for fear that their opinions won't be popular. But when they are there telling the truth, when they are there acknowledging their fundamental beliefs, that's when we have the great possibility of engaging them. And for the most part, people of color and others won't be there. But other white people who seek to be allies, who seek to be citizens, who are deputized because of conscience in becoming a contingent that will speak directly to that white supremacy, that social injustice, is important. And finally, I'll say this. You know, when things like this happen, I look at social media sometimes, and I see that, you know, white stars are still talking about Donald Trump. They're still speaking about some of the viciousness and evil that has prevailed in the culture. But they won't necessarily on their own speak about what's happening when a heinous crime like the one that occurred when Mr. Floyd lost his life is not spoken about, is not on their own addressed. It was Martin Luther King Jr. who said, I'm not Russian, but if I saw something going on in Russia, I'd speak against it. I'm not Catholic, but if I see something against my Catholic brothers and sisters, I'll speak up. Well, even if you aren't black, if you're a human being, if you're a citizen of the United States of America, then take the bull by its horn. Take the dilemma of being both a citizen of this nation and a person who is invested in a country that is deliberately denied opportunity to others systematically. Deeply entrenched in American society is the utter refusal to acknowledge the humanity or the intelligence of black people, writ large against the canvas of human history, against the canvas of America's history. And when we acknowledge all of that, we'll stop taking Dr. King's words out of context. and using him as the only arbiter of racial truth. Though if we will, we can't just take his 1963 words from the March on Washington speech, "I Have a Dream." He also said, "I have a dream. My children, my four little children will live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character." And some people have taken that to mean Dr. King was a race blind figure. He wasn't. That was a notion. That was a dream that he harbored in his heart, but it was not yet real. And in the rest of that speech, he talked about police brutality that black people confronted. He talked about the fact that we were marooned on a tiny island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. Martin Luther King Jr. had more than one hit. He had more than one song, so to speak. The day before he died, he stood up in Memphis, Tennessee at 39 years old, not yet 40, and said, "America, all we're asking is be true to what you said on paper, in the Federalist Papers, in the American Magna Carta, so to speak, in the Declaration of Independence, in the Bill of Rights, where you have articulated high ideals and noble aspirations for a people, where your cradle is e pluribus unum, out of many one, where you have insisted that this nation is a nation best in solidarity with those who are left behind, then include everybody and make certain that the greatness of this nation is that it is able to embrace those who are at the bottom of the totem pole, those who are least able to protect themselves, and lift them up." And then finally, when we look at the fact that this nation, especially with the COVID-19 going on, has a pandemic, disproportionate numbers of black people are dying from COVID-19. But there's another pandemic, COVID-16-19, the year that black people were extricated from their resting place in Africa and brought to these shores forcibly against their will and deposited in this nation. And since then have been exploited, have been segregated, have been deracinated, have been left to their own devices. We have exploited their labor. We have denied them access to education. We have refused to acknowledge their humanity. And yet we continue to take and take and take from their culture. A 6'8" black man like LeBron James will be celebrated and feted when he steps out onto the basketball court. But a tall black man like George Floyd will be seen as an enemy of the state should he seek to do nothing more than breathe. And so we must face our hypocrisy. I would ask white athletes, a few have spoken out, but not enough. Where is Tom Brady? You throw a pigskin as the greatest quarterback ever, mostly to black men besides Gronk. You throw that pigskin to black men. The two receivers you have now, Gronk has joined them, of course, in Tampa are highly touted wide receivers who are black. Black men protect you on the line. Can you not use your bully pulpit to speak up and to say that this death is wrong? Yes, we need coaches like Bill Belichick with his taciturn demeanor. Yes, with his ingenuity of X's and O's and figuring out what to do on the football field. Can he not leave the gridiron and say that what has happened to a fellow citizen is wrong, and that the NFL is 70% black, 69%, 70% black men who give their blood, sweat, and tears, who work hard to make certain that their teams are part of a family of the NFL, and yet you cannot speak up for them? These are the sorts of things that white brothers and sisters seeking to be allies can do. And then I said finally, but I'm a Baptist preacher, so I got a couple pre-closing. The reality is we got a president that everybody knows is a knucklehead. We know that Donald Trump is a vicious, predatory, neo-fascist figure. We know that Donald Trump is highly unintelligent. We know that he is unmolested by enlightenment. We know that this man got there not by talent, but by the will of people who had been hoodwinked by him. Even poor white people who believe that Donald Trump would represent them are not represented adequately by Donald Trump. He is for rich, fat cats. He is not for working class people. And yet he's able to exploit white disenfranchisement or the perception thereof. He's able to exploit white disenchantment with American society. And as a result of that, Donald Trump has had a stranglehold on the Republican Party. which used to have some decency and some efficacy and some utility, even if one disagreed with them. But now they have capitulated to a bully. And today, just before we got on air, at least I came on air, and as you all were on air, Donald Trump talked about law and order. Isn't it interesting that the greatest, the two most prominent presidents in the last 50, 60 years to talk about law and order have been the most corrupt? Richard Nixon and Donald Trump, both of whom, one of whom was impeached, Donald Trump, and the other one was facing impeachment. So here are men now manipulating the rhetoric of law and order while they are unlawful and disorderly. We must rise up as a nation together, forge connections, strike solidarity, and embrace each other. Because if we don't do it together, this nation will continue to be on fire. Those in the streets will continue to pour out there because their desperation is profound. And those of us with the wherewithal to understand what this nation is about must say, finally, we are done with the vicious remnants of racism, of white supremacy, and injustice, and step up and be representative for those who don't have their voices. Those
Michael Eric Dyson, Michael Eric Dyson is with us. Let me ask you, because we hear the term systematic racism, and it's being used a lot right now. How do you change something that is so embedded in our laws, in our country, in our culture? How do you change that systematic racism?
It's very difficult. It's not easy. But first of all, you've got to admit it. You've got to tell the truth that it's there. It's deeply entrenched. And when we mean by systematic racism, it doesn't mean, that somebody says, oh, well, I use the N-word. No. I said something poorly about a black person or a brown person. No. It means that the machinery operates on its own. It means that the systems of government, higher institutions of education, institutions of religion are all infected with a deeply formidable and problematic disease. That is the rejection and repudiation of black humanity upon which rests the expansion, ironically, of American democracy. So we got to at least admit it. There's no such thing as doing something about it if we can't admit that it's there. When you have the head of national security say that law enforcement does not have a problem with systemic racism and that it doesn't have a problem with radical injustice, where are we? What planet are you living on? Do you not see time and time again that that police departments across this country have so deeply infected with racial bias that they are incapable of rendering justice and protecting and serving the most vulnerable who happen to be black and brown? So first you got to admit it. Then you got to reject your citizenship in what Gore Vidal called the United States of amnesia. We live in the United States of amnesia. And I would add, I don't know, you guys are old enough to remember Barbra Streisand.
Sure.
Barbra Streisand supplies the theme song. What's too painful to remember, we simply choose to forget. So we try to sweep it under the carpet. We try to pretend it doesn't exist. And then when there is violence, and then when there are fires and flashbangs and rubber bullets and real bullets, when there is black death and social suffering, then we go and we wring our hands and we wonder what we can do. Well, all along, we have to point these things out. What's one element of systemic racism? Well, kids who are black and brown are often in schools and kicked out earlier and earlier than their white peers. Their white peers are not even kicked out of school, but black and brown kids are kicked out of school. What do we do about that? What do we say about that? How do we engage these school systems that systematically deprive people of access to not only good feeling and good emotion about themselves, but actual knowledge bases that can not only help them, but help the white people who are their peers as well? So when we look at all of that, we've got to acknowledge deeply entrenched, deeply rooted racism in this country. Even LBJ, not LeBron James, but Lyndon Baines Johnson, said that when you got a society where black people started 200 years late, 250 years late, ain't no such a thing as catching up overnight. Think about it. The first black basketball player for the NBA, Mr. Earl Lloyd, died within the last 5 years. I mean, do you hear that? The first professional basketball player for the National Basketball Association died in the last 5 years. That means in our lifetime, the first guy who played basketball who was black died. Now, that's a systemic issue that was remedied. The NBA said we have to open up the ability of black ball players to play. And then, of course, when you had people like Bill Russell after him and, you know, led the Celtics to 11 championships and so on, and Sam Jones and playing right alongside Bob Cousy and Havlicek and the like. So when we make a determination to open the doors and de-racialize in a negative sense our American institutions, if we have the will, we can do it. When Jackie Robinson, of course, integrated baseball. These are things that are decisions that must be intentionally made in order to open up the barrier, to open up the obstacles and barriers that prohibit black people and brown people from doing well. And only when we are conscious of that and intentional about it will those institutional mechanisms fall.
Professor, thank you very much for doing
this.
It's a great day to have you. We know you have a limited window, so we appreciate it. And next time you come on, we'll talk a little sports. But thank you for this today.
Yeah, thank you so much. We're going to talk about why they're jumping over Kobe to get to LeBron, to talk about Jordan. Kobe got 5 rings. I don't know if y'all know that out there.
Amen. Yeah, we got your back on that. All right, stay
all
safe.
Right, brother, I'll come back on, man.
All right,
a lot.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Dr. Dyson.
He was a Baptist preacher.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. he gave us a lot to think about, a lot to talk about.
Let's get the phones back open, too. 877-710-ESPN.
Yeah, we will get some of your phone calls coming in here next. A little bit later on, we'll talk to Clinton Yates, who I saw on Around the Horn today and has some really strong opinions about what's going on this weekend. It was a powerful and moving weekend in Los Angeles as protesters took to the streets to protest the tragic murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis last week. 877-710-ESPN. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. It's an unusual show today because we're taking on the issues that that came up over the weekend, that came up in the last week, the tragic murder of George Floyd last week in Minneapolis, the fact that it took 4 days to charge the police officer, Derek Chauvin. He's charged with third-degree murder. By the way, he had 18 prior complaints about him with the Minneapolis Police Department's internal affairs, and only 2 of those complaints resulted in any sort of discipline. If you want to talk about systematic racism, there it is right there, 18 complaints. 2 resulting in discipline, and now 1 murder on his record.
And that's part of the reason why, Mace, we'll inevitably hear, why don't these athletes just stick to sports? Why do they have to stick their nose into this? We're going to try and track down Keyshawn later, and that's one of the things we'll bring up with Key. But Shanae Ogumike, who of course is one of the stars of the Sparks, a really good basketball player. And Funch, I'm gonna go to the sound that she had the other day.
And I think unbelievably charismatic.
She's going to be a star in TV when she wants to be. But she's still one of the best players in the league. Here was Shanae on Get Up explaining why athletes aren't just going to sit there and be quiet.
Well, seeing all the images of athletes has been tremendously inspiring. And I think the reason why you see athletes leading the charge when it comes to social change is because at the root of it all, it's in our DNA. We are team players. We are wired to care for the last player on the bench as much as we care about ourselves. We've been athletes almost our entire lives. We cannot turn this on or off. This is why you see Jaylen Brown driving 15 hours to lead a peaceful protest in his hometown. This is why you see Maya Moore foregoing WNBA seasons in her prime in order to fight for the wrongfully convicted. This is why you see Karl Anthony Towns, star of the Minnesota Timberwolves, still show strength in the midst of his grief after losing his mom due to the pandemic. That's because I believe as athletes, when we play, we operate in a merit-based world where you are judged by your performance, not your pigmentation. But you see, when we leave the arena, it's not always the same. I always tell people, no matter how much success you have, that success does not guarantee you protection from a society that can, if it so chooses, turn on you based on the color of your skin. So I guess at the root of it all, we as athletes are just simply fighting for the fairness that we have been so fortunate, so lucky to experience while we have been competing. We also, I think, acknowledge our own privilege, because that's not the norm for the majority of people that may look like us, our family, our friends. I guess overall, as athletes, I've been really proud to see them stand up and speak up, because, I mean, we all know this. We're not comfortable staying on the sidelines in the middle of a battle, in the middle of a struggle, when it's crunch time. So we want to be in the game. We want to win, and more importantly, share that feeling. That is what moves us. That is our standard, and it's bigger than sports. It applies to all walks of life, a truly level playing field. So I've been really proud to see all the powerful images of athletes using their collective power.
And by the way, LeBron James on Instagram posted a side-by-side photo of Colin Kaepernick taking a knee on one side and Derek Chauvin with his knee on George Floyd's neck on the other side.
Let's get Dustin from Simi Valley in here on line three. Dustin, you're on 710 ESPN. Hi.
What's going on, gentlemen? How are you doing today?
All right, Dustin. Man. How are you?
With everything going on, I guess we're okay. So I just wanted to touch on a few points real quickly. I know you got a lot of callers. As an Army veteran, I wanted to say, you know, that the thing, I've heard a lot about Colin Kaepernick today. I think the main issue a lot of people had with him was when he took a knee during the national anthem. You know, that song represents a lot to the people that have served the country and sacrificed everything for the country. And I just think the way that he did it was what steered people wrong. I hear a lot about everybody trying to find a way to make all of this work and how we can find a solution to get over the racism in this country. I think one thing that we could start with is when the conversation starts with as a white man or as a black man or as a Mexican or a Chinese man, I think we should change that conversation to as an American, we need to find out how to make everybody equal. And then the police and firefighters, you know, we hear a lot right now about how, you know, the bad police, you know, police and firefighters do a lot of good things for a lot of good people in this country. And I just don't think we should be able to blame the good apples, like Chris Rock would refer to as the bad apples. I just don't think we should take away from that. And then lastly, if you don't mind, I didn't join the military to protect, you know, white people or black people. We do it to protect the American people. And then also I heard a comment today about our youth, you know, wanting to be a part of the black culture but not understand the black history. But I know a lot of young people today listen to hip-hop music and black music, and that really doesn't send the right message as far as how we should be together as a culture. So I just wanted to touch on those things and see what you guys thought. And I appreciate the time.
Okay,
you guys
appreciate the phone call. Could not disagree more on a number of points there. Beginning with Colin Kaepernick. I'm sorry, Colin Kaepernick. I defended when he was taking a knee during the national anthem. The idea of peaceful protest is to create conversation, and he generated more conversation on issues of racial justice than anybody in the last 20 years.
And I'm not sure when he could have done it, Mace, when he could have achieved that goal outside of the anthem. If he would have kneeled during the whole game, a lot of guys kneel during the game, you know, just to get a breather.
Idea was to create conversation. And by the way, the NFL today releases a statement, we're this, that, we're that, the other. You know, where were you when that guy needed you?
Sally bailed Jenkins, on him. The great writer said today, had a really interesting take on this. She said, if you're the NFL, you have to pick a knee. All right. You can't be against Colin Kaepernick kneeling and against the police kneeling on George Floyd.
Yeah.
That, you know, Kaepernick tried to do a peaceful protest and you guys didn't let him.
Yep.
And so now George Floyd gets a knee in the neck and dies.
Yeah.
And so with Sally's take that by not accepting the one knee, it got you the other one.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting perception on
that.
Yes, it is. All right, we're going to try and track down Keyshawn Johnson, and we'll take more of your phone calls. 877-710-ESPN.
And by the way, I don't want to say that the idea of kneeling for the national anthem is not, the idea that it's disrespectful to the military or disrespectful to the flag, I don't think is the point. The point is that that's an opportunity. That was a flashpoint to create conversation. I don't mean to diminish in any way Dustin's service to the country in that disagreement. Keyshawn Johnson coming up for you. More calls coming up for you. 877-710-ESPN. Mason and Ireland, 710-ESPN. All right, Mason and Ireland, 710-ESPN. Michael Jordan, I am deeply saddened, truly pained, plain angry. I see and feel everyone's pain, outrage, and frustration. I stand with those who are calling out the ingrained racism and violence toward people of color in our country. We have had enough. That is from the guy who once said Republicans wear shoes too. We are looking now on television at protests both in Van Nuys and on Hollywood Boulevard. So it is going to be another night when people will be on the streets in what at this moment is peaceful protest over the killing of George Floyd last week in Minneapolis.
And our phone lines are open at 877-710-ESPN. We're trying to do a lot of listening today, being that, you know, I think that's critical. You have to have a lot of empathy today, particularly if you're a couple of white guys like Mason and I. You need to listen to what people who've had these experiences have to say. And here's Willie from L.A. on line four. Hey, Willie, you're on 710 ESPN. Hi.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to share the platform with me. I'd like to give my issue.
Yeah, go ahead.
What you guys are doing is creating a platform where people can share not only their thoughts about how to address the issue, but also to share their experiences when it comes to profiling from the police to corporate racism. Just like back in the South, I'm born and raised in Louisiana, and growing up, that was a real big issue as far as racism is concerned. And just like the Republicans with the congressional lines to keep blacks from having a voice, to the fact of people sharing it now that they see it on the phones and they're videoing it. We've been screaming that for years. I remember back, I was telling my secretary a few years ago how police just pulled us over just for no reason. And they come up with a reason. She was telling me that doesn't exist. It doesn't happen. I had another lady in the office. She said, yes, it does happen. So now people are starting to not only see it, but experience it themselves because you guys are listening. It's hard for one who hasn't been in these shoes to really explain it. And you guys can really understand it unless you have experienced it one-on-one. And that's
well, and Willie, it helps that everybody has a phone in their pocket now. Before you guys, people kept telling us for years that this was going on. But when you see it, it's a different animal. It's a different experience when you can actually watch it play out like it did with George Floyd. So that helps a lot.
It helps, but to live it is even worse. Like in years past, when the lady on TV told LeBron to shut up and just bounce the basketball, they don't want to hear us. They don't hear from us. They just want us to entertain them and then expect everything else in life that's going on to continue. So the platform that you guys are creating now to give us a voice and also to protest what's been going on, like they said, for over 200, almost 300 years, it continues to happen on a regular basis. And it takes not only us on the radio right now, but it's going to take officials to sit down, come up with a plan, and listen to the public on what's going on. And with the hardest thing to do is to get the policemen to tell on themselves, like they have something wrong that goes along in the hospital. Doctors not going to turn on themselves. So that's the issue right now. Everybody's keeping it quiet. But with these phones now and the videos, it is really showing what's going on. And I like this text that I had from years ago. It said the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. People need to step up and do and have a change in America right now.
Willie, thank you for your phone call.
For the
really
phone
appreciate
call.
You jumping in.
Let people know that that's a really large march on Hollywood Boulevard right now. Everything looks peaceful, and the intersection of Sunset and Crescent Heights has been blocked by protesters. There's also a peaceful protest going on in Van Nuys right now. So it's going to be another night of protesters on the streets here in Los Angeles.
And technically, there's an L.A. County curfew that kicks in, depending on which message you listen to, either 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock. Mace, it's already 4:37. It does not look like people are acknowledging that curfew. But I will say that I've been watching this now for about an hour, and I haven't seen any trouble. You know, unlike yesterday when there was a lot of looting, I guess we saw a minimal amount of looting in Van Nuys, but in the Hollywood march, I haven't seen any trouble at all yet.
No, nothing at all. It looks, it all looks peaceful at the moment, which is great. All right, coming up, we are going to make a connection to Keyshawn Johnson at some point. We're also going to talk to Clinton Yates, and we're going to hear more of your phone calls at 877-710-ESPN as we continue to react to what we saw over the weekend and what's happening right now. Peaceful protests across Los Angeles, protesting the tragic killing of George Floyd last week in Minneapolis. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. That is Bob Marley and Redemption Song. Mason in Ireland, what is happening in Los Angeles right now is that people have once again taken to the streets. They're in Van Nuys. They are blocking the intersection of Sunset and Crescent Heights. They are on Hollywood Boulevard, and we're seeing a continuation of what we saw all weekend long. At this moment, everything is peaceful, although the local television networks have steered away from the peaceful protests, and they're now on a car chase.
Car chase are ratings guaranteed, Mace. They will never get off of a car chase.
But see, don't you think this is part of the problem? I mean, part of the problem was that there was a lot of peaceful protest that happened over the weekend, and yet the cameras and the helicopters were on those reckless looters who were doing something other than protesting.
25 years, if it bleeds, it leads. They're going to where the fires are and the violence is. It's just that's how they're programmed, unfortunately. All right, joining us right now is Keyshawn Johnson. Key, of course, one of the hosts of Keyshawn, LZ, and Travis, but more known as a former USC football star and the number one overall pick in the draft, Super Bowl champion. Key, how are you holding up?
Oh, I'm good. I'm just, you know, I'm good, frustrated, just like everybody else, kind of bizarre, you know, but if you listen to our show last week, and when all this first took place, I told all the guys, I said, I can guarantee you that this is going to turn into 1992. I saw it. I said on our show that morning, I said prior to anything happening, the weekend coming and going, I said that this is going to happen. Because whenever you have as many years of frustration built up and no answers, you know, it's going to come to a head. You know, you asked us to stay calm, it's going to change. You asked us to litigate, we litigate. You asked us to lay down, we do that. You asked us to put our hands up, we do that. Every time you ask us something, guess what? We wind up dying behind it, senselessly. Guys are dying just because police officers make decisions or people that are not police officers. The kids in Atlanta, those were a retired cop and his son. Okay, they gunned him down in broad daylight on a jog.
Yep.
It becomes a point where it's like, dude, seriously, it's 400 and something years of oppression. Like, it's enough's enough. Like, this whole, you know, I got friends of mine that say that they don't understand, and you try to explain to them, it's like, you live in a bubble. You're a one percenter. You know, they don't understand the looting. I understand the looting. I don't condone the looting. I, at 18 years old, Mason in Ireland, out of Dorsey High School, West LA Junior College, poverty-stricken South Central Los Angeles, after the verdicts of, I don't know, what is it, 5, 6 white dudes beat the you-know-what out of a black guy on a routine trapping stop. And then they walked freely. And then all of a sudden at 18 years old, we take the streets to looting. The difference is we were looting our own neighborhoods and tearing our own neighborhoods up. Now that these are happening in other parts of the city, people trying to wrap their minds around it. But you got to remember where these people are coming from. And most of them,
You're out of work. There's a pandemic going on. There's no money. There's no flow. They're from poverty. They take an opportunity. I remember as an 18-year-old kid doing those sort of things because I didn't know any better. All I knew was, okay, this was the way to get at it. But the message has never been looting. The message has been protesting. But a handful of people decided that this is what they're going to do. So now the media has turned their attention to the looting, the high-speed chase that's on right now coming out of Van Nuys. Like, that's not important to us. We don't really – it's a part of what's going on. It's a part of the story. But the story is the protesters that's kneeling down, that the police officers, all of a sudden, they want to kneel down too. Well, when Kaepernick kneeled down 5 years ago, it was a problem. But now, all of a sudden, you're looking at it and you're saying, oh, okay, we get it now. We understand now. Like, why does it take so long and take all this to understand what the hell has been going on and what people have been saying for so long? You go back to 1921 in Tulsa. I didn't learn about that until about 10 years ago. Black Wall Street. They was looting us. And I keep saying they.
Yep.
Was looting us. Back then, when we tried to have establishments, they looted us. We was doing our own. We were fine, minding our own business. So when you start to look at it, it all of that and then some comes to a head where you only can do and take so much before it comes to a point where it's just like, we're done. And now you see, you go back to, you know, the 65 riots.
Yep.
You go to 1992. You go to O.J. Simpson's issues. You come to where we are today. You come to senseless killings in Atlanta, Kentucky, Minnesota multiple times, L.A. multiple times, and you still get no answers.
Yeah, Keyshawn Johnson.
Guess what?
Keyshawn Johnson, Keyshawn, LZ, and Travis, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but you mentioned some other names, Keyshawn, Trayvon Martin, Michael Brown, Eric Garner. This has been going on and going on and going on. And I hear people say, yeah, but this time it's going to be different. This time, this is some huge reckoning, and this is going to change. Do you think this time is different?
I honestly do, Mason, to a degree. You still got to follow through. You know, if you go to the dentist and get your teeth pulled and never go back for the checkup to find out if anything else is wrong, guess what? It's going to still keep hurting if they never fix it, you know? And that's what it is. The reason I think it's going to be a change, because if you go back to those, you go back to the 60s, you go back to the 90s, you go back to what's been going on lately, nobody was following us. White people wasn't following us. They was like, in 1992, we burned up our own neighborhood, tore our own neighborhood down. They were sitting over in Beverly Hills swimming in their swimming pools, minding their own damn business. They weren't letting us cross Pico and La Cienega. But you know what has happened now? Is that the whites has joined forces because they're tired of it too. And now they looking at it. I was out in Westlake on Friday with my family. Westlake Village. It's whiter than Ireland. Okay? And I got to the corner of Westlake and T.O. Boulevard, and I looked up. And my kids was like, oh, my God. And I had to stand out in my car and salute them for making me feel better about them joining forces with us. And not just black people, minorities in general. Yes, we are at the forefront of it, but there's a lot of discrimination against minorities in general. But when you look at it, a Westlake Village joining forces, standing there protesting.
Different.
That's why it's different.
Yeah.
Because now
right.
Utah, Colorado. I saw Colorado the other day on the news. About 7,000 white people.
Yep.
Laying out with their hands on their back, screaming, "No peace, no justice."
Yeah,
I mean,
you're right, Keith.
Come on.
Keyshawn Johnson's with us. Key, I wanted to ask you about this. I don't know if you saw it, but you know, we always hear everyone's entitled to their opinion. Everyone gets free speech. Blah blah blah. There was a USC football booster, a woman named Marla Brown. She was an LAPD union attorney a few years ago that wrote on her Twitter account that the protesters need to be shot. And she got shouted down on Twitter. But USC took a pretty extraordinary step. They revoked her season tickets and put her on a list that means she can't buy tickets ever again. Did USC do the right thing?
Absolutely. I mean, what type of question is that? I know you got to do your job, John. But of course she, and I'm glad her name is out there finally. Because when I first saw it from the athletic director, Mike Bone, the name wasn't associated with it. But eventually the name came out. And they absolutely did the right thing. She ought to just live in misery from here on out. Like, that's part of the problem also, is when you got commissioned people that's aligned with the police department.
Yep.
They got the wrong people on the commissions. They got the boosters, the billionaires. They don't have anybody from the community on part of these commissions.
Yeah, by the way, Key, she was an LAPD union attorney.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. Why you didn't go get an attorney from the hood to put on there? Somebody that lives and breathes where LAPD has to work every single day. Why you didn't go get somebody like that and put them on there?
It was pretty ridiculous what she wrote.
That's the problem we got in society in general, whether it's in sports, it's all nepotism. You don't see black minorities being hired at powerful positions in the world of sports because it's all the hierarchies and the nepotism that goes on. It just becomes too damn much.
Hey, Keyshawn, I wanted to ask you one other thing. These protests are going on again tonight. There's one in Van Nuys. There's one in Hollywood. As far as you're concerned, would you like to see these protests continue for a few days? Would you like to see them kind of toned down? Or what's the best thing to get this problem solved in terms of these protests?
Well, I think what would happen to me is if they go lock them dudes up that's sitting in Minnesota, go lock them up. You letting them be free. Lock them up and it'll slow it down. Go lock them up. They're part of it too. You letting them, they eat steaks and lobsters at home, watching it on TV, drinking their wine. Go lock them up. What are they still around for? What you waiting on? They're part of the problem. Yes, they may not have the knee on the neck, but they're standing right there. So you're a corporate, you right there with them. You part of the problem. If me and you, Ireland, right now, got in a car and went and done a crime, we both most likely going to jail. Y'all might give me more time, but you going too. You
right,
going too for standing
yeah,
there.
They were, without question, they were complicit in that murder of George Floyd.
So why are they still on the streets?
It's a great question.
By the way, you think if they're arrested, that things quiet down?
I don't say quiet. I think it slows it down. It starts the conversation again.
Yep. All right, Key. Thank you for doing this, and we'll be listening tomorrow morning, 6 o'clock. Keyshawn, LZ, and Travis. And by the way, Key, I wanted to thank you for something. I didn't notice LZ's video essay until you sent it out. It's on LZ's Twitter account. It's on Key's Twitter account. LZ went into the downtown protest, and the thing that jumped out about that, Key, to me, was what you said earlier. How many of the protesters were other than black? There were a lot of whites, a lot of Hispanics, a lot of different ages, and like you said before, that's why it's different. That's really highlighted in LZ's video.
Yes, that is correct. That's why it's different. And now let's see if they finish, because if you ain't with us, you against us.
Yep.
Now, that's just the bottom line. If you ain't with us, you against us. The I'm not a racist and all those, that's cool. You support blacks, that's cool. But you got to finish the job. Just don't support by writing a check. Finish the job.
Yep. All right. Hey, Keith, thanks very much. We'll be listening
tomorrow morning.
All right. No problem, bud.
All right. See you. Keyshawn, LZ, and Travis every morning here on 710 ESPN. All right. Let's get a break in. Coming up, more of your phone calls, 877-710 ESPN, letting you know that the march on Hollywood Boulevard looks huge and peaceful. The intersection, it looks like the intersection of Sunset and Crescent Heights is cleared a little bit. The intersection has been cleared a little bit, and there is also a protest going on in Van Nuys. Everything is peaceful at this moment. All right. Coming up for you, we've got Clinton Yates is going to join us. Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN.